Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Kim. Yes, Kim and that band for that wonderful theme song we hear every Saturday, Clouds of Abundance. It is another day in paradise here in Phoenix, Arizona. Welcome all into our Paradise One studio, where every day is a holiday and the party never stops. Yay! All righty, I am Nazim Rashid, author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self, with our program based on this book today. Okay, Clouds of Abundance. I love that. So I hope everybody can feel clouds of abundance following them everywhere. Yes, it is. We're going to start with our opening prayer. Like I've mentioned before on this program, whatever name or reference fits your belief system will do just fine when I am mentioning God. Just know that we did not create ourselves, and in knowing this reality, we can give attention and honor the source of our creation for guidance and direction. I am using God as a universal theme and is not relegated to any particular religion or belief system. With the name of God, we thank you for another day to live the life that you have ordained for us. Thank you for your systems of knowledge, reason, logic, and practical applications so we can benefit from your grace and mercy. Thank you for the body and mind you have given us. Thank you for blessing us with a clear thinking mind and the guidance to use it effectively for ourselves and others. Amen. All right. Now we have for our show notes, Dorothy, take it away.
Let us hear from you as we learn the needs of our child self. The chapters in the book that address these needs are forgiveness, validation, self-esteem, visualization, self-image, communication and listening skills, optimism, gratitude, faith, spirituality, codependency and addictions, recovery issues, identifying and managing emotions. You can connect with Nazim using his email address, nrbookclub@cox.net. That's N as in Nazim, R as in Rashid, bookclub, nrbookclub@cox.net. He sends out blogs and book excerpts every month from fans who connect with him. Book-related information such as book signing dates, webinars, and workshops are sent from there as well. The book Reconnected will be released and available by spring of this year. Nazim?
All righty. All right. Wonderful. There we are. Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes, I do. No, I don't hear you.
Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, there we go. Yes, we're back on. All right. We will be reconnected. That's right, for sure. Okay, this is the Reconnected Show, the key to personal power. This is a personal growth program designed with your inner peace in mind. The discussions will be based on my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. This book contains a methodology for filling the many emotional voids experienced in childhood. Reconnected is for those adults who want to create real internal change in their lives by addressing significant emotional events in their past which are affecting them presently. It is also for parents who want vital information in raising their genius young souls, mentors who can appreciate additional tools for their mentees, and teachers who would cherish more methods for shaping, motivating, and inspiring our students, reflecting the greatness that they already possess within. And also couples, especially with today's program, couples wanting a better relationship. They can also benefit from the personal growth tools being offered, especially today. All right, as you regulars know, we have a happy news segment. We want to always honor and acknowledge happy news going on here and abroad. Great things are happening all the time. You know, so I want everybody to realize that. I don't care what you see on the regular news channels. There are wonderful things happening on a regular basis. And today is very special because as I was researching the Global Network for Happy and Wonderful News, I found something here in Phoenix, Arizona. So with that, we have Dorothy. Take it away.
Okay. This story is about nonprofits turning foreclosures into first homes, lenders selling at a loss or giving them away to be rehabbed and resold. Francesco Cruz maneuvered around boxes of new flooring and open cans of paint as they surveyed the foreclosed Phoenix house they would soon call their own. This house wasn't typical of the thousands in foreclosure-battered Arizona that banks have auctioned for cheap, often to investors who make just enough repairs to satisfy a potential renter. The Cruises have become first-time home buyers, helped by one of many nonprofit groups that can snag foreclosures at a discount and sometimes for free before banks make them available to speculators. It's a glimmer of hope for struggling neighborhoods that are watching banks foreclose on a record number of homes this year. In the Cruz's case, Rebuilding Together obtained the home for free from J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. The bank had foreclosed on its previous owner. Honeywell International Incorporated provided the labor to renovate it and $25,000 cash for the materials. In a market hot with speculators snapping up cheap foreclosures, Rebuilding Together's program is one of many that give a leg up to nonprofits and redevelopment agencies trying to stabilize neighborhoods dotted with vacant houses. Yet Jim O'Donnell, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company's Community Revitalization Program Manager, acknowledges that each home being offered to a community group also has a story about someone who lost it to the bank. It's an unfortunate situation, and that's why we really take a conscious effort to work with our partners to ensure that we can have some good stories at the end of this unfortunate equation, O'Donnell said. Through these programs, we put what I call this protective umbrella over these affordable homes so that first-come, first-served nonprofits can get access to them to ensure they get turned back into the hands of the community. Cruz and his wife watched earlier this month as more than 70 red-shirted Honeywell Aerospace employees swarmed throughout the three-bedroom house, putting the final touches on new kitchen cabinets, painting baseboards and walls, cleaning up the landscaping. All the neighbors, they're just so grateful because the house was looking so bad, Pam Cruz said. This is a good example of the banks working with the mortgage companies and so forth, helping the community revitalize the neighborhood. The disabled veteran, Vietnam veteran, and his wife bought the house after the renovation was complete and got a completely updated home for below market value. the mortgage payment will be much less than the $900 a month they were paying in rent. Under an expanded agreement announced in September between the federal government and the banks that provide about 75% of all U.S. mortgages, as many as 100,000 more repossessed homes will join those already being pumped into the nonprofit and redevelopment agency pipeline. That deal started in 2008 as a pilot program to provide foreclosed homes to cities and nonprofits that could renovate them for low and moderate income families. About $7 billion in federal funds has been allocated to the program. But the discount program will only handle a small percentage of the foreclosures expected in the coming years. Banks seize more than 980,000 homes nationwide through the first 11 months of 2010 and will likely take back a million more next year, according to foreclosure listing firm Realty Track Incorporated. The home that Cruises now own is one of 1,200 Chase has donated or sold at steep discounts to nonprofits and community development agencies in the past 2 years. There are similar programs at other major lenders, including Wells Fargo and Company, which will donate close to 200 homes this year and sell hundreds more at a discount. The Cruises said they had been contemplating buying a house for months before a friend who is a real estate agent recommended the couple to Rebuilding Together's Phoenix chapter. At first time home buyers, the retired couple were the type of people the group is looking to help. The nonprofits generally have experience rehabbing homes, and their efforts help pull up home values. Groups like Habitat for Humanity, Rebuilding Together, and community development organizations like Detroit Shoreway in Cleveland and Jacob's Ladder in Memphis participate. The availability of foreclosure homes has helped community-based housing groups like Community Housing Works in San Diego expand for developing affordable apartment housing to help buyers get into their first homes. The 30-year-old group started a nonprofit brokerage in 2008 and soon discovered that buyers were not able to buy homes because of competition from investors. The first 15 days on the job back in 2008, I made 50 offers and had none of them accepted because investors snapped them up, said George Luis Vega, who runs the group's nonprofit brokerage. Another group that specialized in rehabilitating homes told Community Housing Works of Banks First Look programs that Vegas Group signed on quickly. And Vegas Group signed on quickly. Buyers in this market that we serve aren't objecting to price. They're just not being given access to inventory, Vega said. And I think that these First Look programs are really allowing a lot of folks that want to be in these more diverse communities. This year, Community Housing Works acquired 18 homes, rehabbed them, and handed the keys to buyers. Next year, they hope to do close to 100. In Cleveland, the Detroit Shoreway Neighborhood Organization has acquired 72 one- or two-family properties in the past 2 years and is actively leaning on the banks to help obtain more distressed properties. The thing we try to get banks to realize is if you sell a property, just fire sale it to a slum investor, you may hold a mortgage on a property next door, say Matt Lesko, the group's housing developer. When that owner gets sick of the property next to them, Lesko said, then guess what? Now you have another mortgage in default. Dennis Flynn, executive director of Rebuilding Together in the Phoenix area, said his group has historically focused on fixing up houses for the elderly, disabled, and poor. One recently has Flynn started thinking about actually acquiring properties and putting serving homeowners in them. "We'd like to make this a veterans program," he said as he scrolled through a list of more available first look houses on his smartphone. For Francesco Cruz, who suffers from diabetes and other ailments, he traces to his service as a Green Beret on multiple tours of Vietnam in the 1960s. Watching the final touches being put on his home was emotional. "We were overwhelmed with all these people coming to help us," said Cruz, who is known as Chico, "because you know well that labor is the highest thing whenever it comes to remodeling a home. The labor really gets you." Nazim, that's the end.
Okay, wonderful, fantastic. All right, well, we see right now that people are getting homes that are very, very, very low cost, and there are some nonprofits who are acquiring these homes, and it's good. Of course, you know, we know there's a lot more need out there, but at least some things are happening. And there's a great improvement, and that's the key thing. Instead of looking at all the thousands and, you know, millions or so people who are tasting the negative end of this whole negative spiral, there's some people who are getting benefits, and that percentage is growing. That positive percentage is growing, and that's what you want to focus on, because as we focus on the positive growing, more positive will grow. That's how it is, you know, so we got to focus on that. It's real important, so very good. All righty then. Okay, now today's theme, we're going to talk about communication and listening skills. But first, we always try to do a recap of our last week so you can be more motivated to go back and hear the last week's program and get a good idea of what's going on there. And you also get the flow because, you know, everything we're doing is a flow. Last week, we talked about communication skills in the workplace. And this time, we're going to talk about relationships. So last week, we had executive director of the Praxis, that's P-R-A-X-I-S, Praxis Project, Makani Thimba Nixon, addressing the topic of communication and listening skills in the workplace. When she was asked how communication can be reached between those who have the means to fund organizations and the directors and our grant writers, Makani was saying that since we have a picture mentality, both parties have to be able to see the same picture. So what she has been able to do was to get foundation administrators to physically come to her facility and experience what the staff experienced and hear the conversations for themselves. This way, the picture the funders and the pictures the workers have are the same picture. Another critical area in her line of public health advocacy kind of work is recognizing what you are known for or branding. Your reputation goes out before you, and this enhances or hinders the communication process. You have to operate with a certain consistent level of integrity because we connect with people with whom we have trust. This branding is also important between administrators and their staff, and this enhances the communication process. Taking time to greet people and find out how they are doing makes a difference in how they respond to you. Creating the environment that allows the staff to bring their whole person increases trust and a healthy communication connection. Common interests is another area which enhances communication. When Makani was asked to talk about the relationships between administration and the staff and volunteers, responded by saying that you have to invest regular time in organization policies, objectives, and keeping the picture alive that represents where the organization is going, and allowing for the proper feedback to ensure that the staff understand and has received the same message as the one that was given out. Having a positive, expectant mentality is one area where a disconnect occurs because many staff members are operating from a position of scarcity, lack, and competition. It takes more conversations to have the history of the organization and relay where the organization was and where it is now. And where it is now is primarily based on faith, optimism, and a positive, expectant disposition. McConney admitted that the process of a positive outcome goes both ways. This is why she keeps an open mind to carefully listen to other input and be open to another way to reach the goals of the organization. She keeps a sticky, little sticky pad on her computer that says, quote, "What do I need to let go of regarding my own beliefs to fully see the alternatives?" Unquote. Very good. Another aspect of enhancing communication is to ask questions. The questions are for clarity of your position and also questions to see if the other party has another way or opinion in reaching the stated goal. But Connie said that listening carefully and empathically is important, not to just listen for when they stop talking. She said we are to listen with intent, to listen and imagine that what they are saying is very important to you as it is to them. The vocabulary they are using comes from the pictures they are carrying. People talk from their pain a lot of times and from whatever they are emotionally bringing with them. So many times, it is not their words that they are intentionally giving to you. It is their pain. Knowing this, we can hopefully overlook some of those negative encounters. For the words were not meant for us. It is their emotions needing an outlet. All right, so if you want to hear the whole deal there, go back to www.blogtalkradio.com/reconnected. And then you can click on the January 22nd show, Communication and Listening Skills, Part 1, and you'll hear the whole story there. Yes, today we are going to talk about communication and listening skills regarding relationships with our recurring guest, licensed marriage and family therapist, Jeff Gaisley. We probably will be doing a continuation on this one because of the tremendous need, seeing how over 50% of marriages are ending in divorce. People are scared of relationships, scared of commitments, are untrusting, and have succumbed to the popular notion that you are to trust no one, believe in no one, commit to no one, and truly love no one but yourself. This way, you won't be hurt and be disappointed. People are scared of relationships, scared of commitments, are untrusting. Oh, did I just say that? Okay. All right. You won't be hurt and disappointed. Okay, I repeated myself there. Okay, Jeff Gaisley will speak about the principles of communication, assertiveness, and healthy boundaries. He will also discuss how shame and abandonment issues can derail healthy communication because adults react to these conditions by reverting to more childlike feelings and behavior. So without any further ado, we'll bring Jeff Gaisley. Jeff, are you there?
I am, Nazim. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I hope you enjoyed our introduction there.
And I did.
Good, good, good. Fantastic. I really enjoy wonderful, guests like yourself who really understand the need of what we're doing now. And a lot of people just don't see the picture there. And I'm glad that you're one of the ones who do and are helping the show and helping people all over the world understand another way to see life for them. You see, another way to see life for them, and it's good.
Great.
And today, this is great. And I'm just waiting to hear what you have to say about this one. Relationships have a lot of things we got to talk about. And I'm sure you see this all the time, too. There are a lot of people I respect in the field of personal development, even with therapists, who are great in their profession. They have great tools. They help a lot of people, but they have problems in their own relationships. They don't. They're single, a lot of them, and they can't handle their own issues. They can't handle relationships. They can't stay married. They can't stay committed. They can't be in a relationship themselves. And so he said, "Wow, you know, well, why not? Why not?" And so we're going to talk about. We're going to start the conversation today. So I want you to help us along here and kind of give us your spill on relationships and how we can improve communication and where it really comes from, the communication issues we're having.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a whole lot easier to help somebody else than to help yourself. And, you know, what's really, really important for everyone is to really kind of look at themselves in an objective way without shame and to try to improve on what they're doing. And I think if they do that, and they don't have to feel like they need to be perfect, then it's often a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, communication is very, very easy, and in other ways, it's incredibly hard. So if I had to summarize the way that I try to teach people assertiveness and communication would be very simple in terms of what you do. You think of how you feel, because the language of love is feeling-based, not thinking-based, mm-hmm. in communication with loved ones. In other ways, you can go ahead, you know, work or whatever and talk intellectually, but it really has to be feeling-based if you're going to get it across in an intimate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If at that point you figure out how you feel, and you state it in an I feel sad when you do this, and I would appreciate it if this happened instead. If that's what you're doing, and you're using good eye contact, and the body posture is not threatening, you're not standing over a person or standing too close, and the tone matches the feeling, that's pretty easy for an assertive statement. When somebody speaks to you, if you are in the headspace of I'm going to resolve a problem or understand what you're saying, then I'm going to be riveted on what the other person is trying to get across. I'm going to play that back by paraphrasing, which is summarizing their position, and then I'm validating. And that does not necessarily mean agreeing. It means I understand how they feel and I let them know. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, both of us, with the goal of resolving an issue and understanding each other, then communication is not all that difficult. But what happens is feelings and old hurts tend to get in the way.
Uh-oh.
And then all hell breaks loose.
Uh-oh. Jeff, right there, I just want to help the audience understand validation there. Now, can you just go back a little bit and kind of talk about that?
Well, let me do paraphrasing first. So if if I paraphrased, I would say, Nazim, are you saying that you would like me to clarify what paraphrasing is for the group?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a paraphrasing. And then a validating would be thinking about how you're feeling behind what you're saying. And that's a bit of a guess. So what I would probably do is, say, Nazim, I understand that it's really important for you because of why you're doing the show to get that information across, and I'd be happy to.
Mm-hmm.
So the paraphrasing is a summarization of the other person's statement, and the validation is some kind of feeling statement saying, I understand your position or I can appreciate it, even if I don't agree with it necessarily.
Mm. And what does the validation do to the other person or for the other person?
It is like calling a person by their first name. If I say, you know, Nazim, that sound feels good to people, a recognition that I'm caring about what you're saying and that I recognize you. And there are very few things more powerful than that.
Can you just say that one more time?
I don't know if I can, but let me. If people like to be recognized for their unique uniqueness, and when you are paraphrasing or validating, you're really saying, I am trying to understand who you are, and I appreciate who you are. Martin Buber is a philosopher from Israel who played with communication a lot, and what he would call this is an I-thou relationship. I-it relationship is when we objectify people and look at them as objects. An I-thou is I understand your uniqueness and value it, even if it's different from mine. And it's hard to fight with people who are thinking that way about you. What's
okay.
there to argue with?
Okay, I love it. I love it. Okay, you can go on from there. Okay, good.
So
I love it.
If the goal of communication is I want to understand your position, Nazeem, and I want to understand who you are, and that I'm trying to resolve an issue between us in a win-win position, then we're almost always going to get along. Even if we disagree, we'll tend to feel pretty good about each other. But if what I need to do is either win or defend myself, then we are going to fight in one way or another. And unfortunately, our culture has really specialized in teaching the kind of competition and winning in this sort of a thing. And there's a lot of shame in the culture. And so people take things very personally. So let me give you an example. I don't know what kind of music you like, but I'm going to say, you know, I hate polka. Now, let's say you are the polka champion, you know, of the United States.
Okay.
You're going to hear it one of two ways. Either I respect you, but I don't like polka, or you're going to hear me say, you know, polka sucks and you're an idiot for liking it, even though I didn't know that you enjoyed polka.
Right.
Okay? That's what happens with shame. You add words on to it. You get hung up in having to be perfect and having to have the person agree with you in every step. And if they don't, then you've got to defend yourself by attacking my position. And that cancels out communication. Communication is trying to understand and resolve. And the minute we stop doing that, we're into winning or defending. And it's over.
Wow, okay. I know you also mentioned abandonment issues.
Yes. In general, and this kind of comes back to dysfunctional family issues that you and I talked about a few months back. If in the family, if I am brought up feeling that I have to be perfect, and if I am looked at as if I am not good enough if I make a mistake, then I feel shame, and I feel that they've taken their love away from me and approval. And that's abandonment. You do not have to be abandoned by being driven out to the desert and let out. We're abandoned when emotionally we're looked at as somehow not good enough or subhuman. And I can do that with tone. So I can say, polka, really? And I've just told you you're not good enough, and you're going to fight that. You're going to have to fight that. And so now we're no longer trying to understand each other. We're fighting. And so how this plays out in intimate relationships is that when we feel abandoned, we have a tendency to try to resolve that abandonment issue in our lifetime. It becomes one of our main tasks. And we do that in a very, very strange way. We consciously try to pick somebody who would be loving and approving. And most of the time, subconsciously, we pick somebody who has as much of shame and abandonment as we do, and who acts in some ways like our parents.
Oh.
And then we hit each other's buttons, and we go ahead and recreate the fight. Where I often see this is, and this is a bit of a stereotype, but it's got a lot of validity to it. Because of the way the families were run in the early 50s especially, little girls felt a lot of abandonment from their fathers because their fathers were often working.
Mm-hmm.
The wife was left at home at that time and very often would get overly involved with the kids because there was nothing else to do and they were trying to make up for the loss of the father.
Okay.
Oftentimes, little boys would feel smothered by their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say we get a abandoning girl getting married to a enmeshed or smothered son. And what's going to happen is the little girl is going to be asking, who is now a wife, is going to be asking for attention. The male is going to be thinking of it as you're demanding and smothering, and
mm-hmm.
they're going to pull away. And what you have is a terrific repetition compulsion going on. And the communication is one where there are four people in the room. There are two adults, and then there are the two children that got stuck in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And those two children are really the ones who are doing the main communicating. And kids
mm-hmm.
don't communicate as well as adults.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So as I said, the mechanics of communication is easy. Think of how you feel. State it in an I feel statement. Watch your tone, your eye contact, and your body posture. Do some paraphrasing and validating. But what you really have to focus on is your intent. Your intent needs to be to understand and to resolve an issue. And you have to monitor yourself to see if you're over-emotional, which means you're probably in your child.
Okay.
And your child is going to tend to be abusive in the way that it communicates. It's going to be attacking or defending.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest
Jeff, right there. Now, can the child also take the other position of being what's the word I'm trying to look at? Withdrawing.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling sorry for itself, withdrawing, and wouldn't that affect the adult also?
Absolutely, and it's just a different form of communication. It basically is trying to hurt the other person by saying, I'm not going to play because you're mean.
Right, okay, there you go. Right, there you go. yeah, it's
a
withdrawing.
A sophisticated form of communication. What we do is we just slam the door and go to the bar. And it looks like it's somehow tough.
Yes. Man, you know, this is so wonderful because this is really kind of the germ of my book there, you know, How to Mentor Our Child Self. And I talk about how that child self, that child self within is going to win. You know, because the thing about it, as a child was a child, it did not get its needs met. You know, and what happens after a while, he could get tired of not getting his needs met, and he's going to say, well, he or she, wait a minute here. I didn't get it met now, but believe me, I'm getting met later on. Sooner or later, I'm getting my needs met. And it's going to come knocking on your door through the consciousness and say, look, okay, you think you're going to have a good time? Then you go have a nice, happy life. Well, hello, I'm still here.
Yep, absolutely.
And I'm going to get you.
And so what has to happen is the adult part of us needs to be able to re-experience that early childhood pain and resolve it so that we don't feel abandoned and we don't have many needs. Adults really shouldn't have a ton of needs. We should have periodic wants. And if it's a want, then I can talk about it very calmly. If it's a need, then I tend to feel you owe me. And mm-hmm. people don't owe anything to anyone.
Right, exactly.
Just basic respect.
Mm-hmm. And you see it all the time now, especially with your – I find that, you know, I've seen a few seniors recently, you know, that I'm talking about the 80 years old plus, and I have a friend of mine who has a service station, gas station in Sun City, and I go by there and talk with them, and he shares the stories, and a lot of them are really angry and bitter. And I said, why? I'm the optimist, you know. Why? They should be happy. And so they're saying that they see him. He's about 30 years under them. He owns the station and doing well, but they see him, and they actually see their grandchildren who have abandoned them, or they see their other family members who have abandoned them. But it's because that they've been so bitter, you know, bitter and angry. And I said, what's all that anger about? Good God Almighty, what's happening? Well, they never resolve these issues. And what happens as you get older, they magnify. You know?
Absolutely. Any wound will become infected and grow if it's not taken care of. And so the tendency is you have people who are absolutely livid about their needs that they have not gotten met. And they expect their partner to give those. And the difficulty is they can't. You can't be a parent and a partner and a lover all at the same time. If so, then you create an incest situation and the marriage is over.
I see.
It has to be that we take care of whatever unresolved issues we have with our child. And then we confront life from a adult equal to equal status. And when you see relationships that look like that, they're very, very peaceful, very intimate, and very calm.
Mm-hmm.
And they resolve any issues around, you know, day-to-day living pretty easily. In fact, that's one of the big things that I stress to my clients. Often they'll come in and tell me that what couples fight about is money and sex and parenting. And I disagree with them. I think they fight about, do you love me? Do you respect me? Do you care about me? Are you shaming me? And are we equals?
Okay.
And if any of those I feel are lacking, then we'll fight about that issue, but use the surface issue to deal with that. So if you're fighting about who's going to do the vacuuming, that's not an issue of partnership, chores. It's an issue of respect, love, and caring. And if you think of it that way and you talk about it that way, usually it's very easy to resolve.
Mm. Now, can you repeat that part again about the instead of the money and
money,
sex and
parenting.
Yeah. Okay.
And communication, just general communication. It's more, do you love me? Do
love
you
me.
Respect me?
Respect.
Do you care for me?
Care for me.
Do you see us as equals? And are you shaming me?
Mm. Now, where does trust fit in there?
Trust is really all throughout that. I mean, if somebody treats you with respect and caring, I think their mutual trust just comes from there.
Okay.
But I think you're right. It's a huge, huge part of what people will have difficulty with. If you trust your partner to have your needs in their mind,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to protect yours so much.
Mm, right, exactly. Yes, 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 yes. And also, as you know, I'm sure you'll agree that is a major factor in communication process.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, trust. You know, trust is a real big one, real big one. And we're looking at money issues, or even the emotion. Whole idea of infidelity and
mm-hmm.
You know, taking money that you know it wasn't agreed upon, and so forth and so on. That's really major. That's really major. And when you find out, I know when I found that when couples don't have those two things in order, there's constant unrest.
I think you're absolutely right, Nazim. No doubt about it. You know, oftentimes, especially younger relationships, what I'll tend to still hear at times is, well, I let her go out with her friends, and I'm thinking, damn, she sounds like a dog. You know, you don't let your partner do something. They're an equal human being, you know. But if you trust that person and you know that they care about you and that they love you, you aren't going to worry about what they're doing. The assumption is that they are doing good things.
Right, exactly, sure.
And
sure.
That all comes down to whether you trust yourself. You know, if my partner proves to be unfaithful, will I be okay on my own? And if so, then I still don't have to worry about it as much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that still comes back to treating your own child and making sure that any of the unresolved issues out of childhood are taken care of.
Yes, I see that, surely. And also with money here, too, you know, if you leave, $500 on a table, and will it be there when I come back?
Right, right.
And it's so major, it's so major. And I said, man, you know, and for a long time, I didn't know where that was coming from, because personally, I never had those issues. But I said, well, you know, when I started talking to people, and as you're in this business and you start having various couples that you're seeing, and you know, you're dealing with your caseload, and you say that you see that that's pretty common. I mean, like, you know, people are untrusting. It's like across the board.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, when they started out dating, oftentimes that trust was there. You know, if you think your partner is terrific, and when you fall in love with somebody, you think they're terrific.
Oh, sure.
And if you trust them, then what's going to happen is it's going to be a very low-maintenance relationship. There's not a lot of work to it. You don't have to strain and struggle. But if it becomes a high-maintenance relationship where you don't trust your partner and you're trying to change them in one way or another to protect yourself, it turns into self-love. So I'd be much more concerned with myself if I'm trying to get my partner to do what I think they should do.
Yes, yes, yes. But now, Jeff, you have to admit now, in the beginning, you know, you're talking about the infatuation period. That is not a logical period.
No, it isn't. In fact, there's really kind of varying degrees of love. In other words, when you first see someone, research is saying now that what you get attracted to is your immune system similar to but dissimilar enough for me to smell your pheromones appropriately and be attracted.
Oh,
which
well.
Which is fascinating. Okay. And so, if that's the case, we tend to bond together in a lust limerence fashion.
Right.
And then, but what's interesting is we also almost always pick somebody who brings with them the opposite interlocking conflict for childhood. So if I've grown up feeling that I have to save my mother from my alcoholic father, then I need somebody who I think needs saving.
Right.
And and just by looking at her, I will somehow know. And that's some of the sixth sense sort of energy psychology, you know, that we've talked about before. But at the year and a half mark, when the oxytocin, which is a amphetamine opiate-like chemical that bonds two people together when they fall in love, when that dissipates a little bit, I really know who I have. I can see their faults and their strengths, and I have to fall in love all over again.
Right.
And those are the ones that really last. And the real difficulty is, can you be in love chemically and still have the logical part of your brain work so that you know the good and bad parts, or the weak and the strong parts, within the first year? You're in really good shape.
Right, exactly. Sure, right, right. This is why when you're looking at trust issues and communication, you can't measure that beginning period.
Very hard.
You can't measure that. So that's why I've talked to couples, I said, okay, sounds fine, but let's talk in 12 months.
Well, I tell you what, there's a way to get around some of that, and it's again dealing with the child. If your child is still feeling abandoned and shamed and hasn't completely individuated, then what's going to happen is you're going to be attracted to people who have mirror problems.
Right.
But the interesting thing is, when you fix that problem within yourself, then you tend to get attracted not only on a chemical basis, but they have to be relatively healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are seeing someone who is much more together at that time. And,
yes.
And so that's the only way that I really know how to deal with it is if you take care of yourself first, then you can trust yourself that you're getting attracted to somebody who is relatively healthy.
And see, now that is unfortunately what happens when couples break up early, because if you have one person who is now getting resolved of their childhood issues, but the other person is not, then the attraction becomes diminished, wouldn't you say?
I would, but I would think that what would happen is if somebody is really resolved with their stuff, they would go ahead and know that in the first few dates. So let's do it this way. Let's say, because I'll use some of my stuff, I really did grow up in an alcoholic family. My dad was alcoholic. Now,
right.
If I've resolved those issues, and I'm single, let's say I'm single, and I go out and I date somebody who drinks too much and falls off of her bar stool, I should not call her again. But if I haven't resolved my issue, then that's the woman for me, boy. I need to fix her.
Oh, all right.
So then I'd call back.
But hold tight, Jeff. Now, you're saying in the first few days. Now, I think that's too short a period of time, the first few dates.
I don't think if you really have resolved it. And again, I'm trusting the deeper parts of us.
Okay.
I think that if we've really, really resolved our main core issues, then our antenna for health is really, really accurate.
Okay, yes, okay.
And so at least it will weed out all the, it would certainly weed out the woman who fell off the bar stool.
Okay, but hold on. Now, I suppose the issues are not resolved, though. You think they are, because you've gone to a few nice little rah-rah seminars, and you feel good externally, and they aren't really resolved.
Then I'm going to have to work through some more, right?
Yeah, that's
right. In other
words,
that's what we do with our relationships. I mean, we're talking in some ways about the negative part of that, but it's really kind of glorious that subconsciously we can pick somebody who has the mirror issue for us and work it through. Unfortunately, there's a lot of pain that goes along with that, but I think it's the only way that we work it through, because we usually don't know that we have that issue until we get into a relationship, and then we go into therapy and thinking it's a relationship problem. And as a marriage and family person, I'm going to often restructure that problem to where I'm telling them that they both have an individuation problem.
Okay, yes, yes. And this is really key, because one of the things I said in my summary I sent out for this program is that we actually discover a new part of ourselves through the relationship process.
Absolutely.
You know, another part of ourselves, and then we actually see another personal growth that we experience, and you'll never find it outside of that. That's why relationships are so important. One of the main reasons,
yes,
is because you find another part of yourself that needs developing, and also you can see when you have elevated yourself, when you have actually gone through some things, you say, man, you know, I had no idea that issue was even there. And now,
exactly,
I feel much better. You know, this is good.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's painful to go through the process, but,
right,
you know, I think the reason for that is we get hurt so early, mm-hmm, and we don't have the capability to really understand. And so once we're old enough to understand, those feelings need to be reactivated. And the way they get reactivated is to find somebody in the present who has some of those issues.
And then it
pops right up again. So, you know, if I think about the worst relationship that I ever had, I thank God that I had that relationship, or I wouldn't be sitting in the midst of a 26-year relationship.
Wow, isn't that something?
Exactly. Now, if you would have asked me 2 years after the event, I would have not been so kind.
You know, and that's another important thing, too. I could relate personally myself here, too. I said, my God, I was like, how did I survive that one? You know,
mm-hmm.
But through the process, you learn something about yourself that you didn't know about.
And I think the biggest thing with that is, first of all, you learn how you were just as screwed up, and that underneath it, there's a whole lot of healthy parts.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something? You know what, Jeff? You know, this leads me to our next level, which we can't have today, and I'm going to ask, you know, really, really nicely, since you're a good friend of the show here, can you please join me next week? I mean, like, what I want to do, I want to actually look at the different family models, such as the lost child, the scapegoat,
uh-huh,
hero, and so forth, and look at each one, and then look at that person as an adult and their particular relationship issues and how that impacts or enhances the communication process.
That sounds fun. Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Because I'm telling you, because we have different parts of ourselves, and we experience different things. And so we need to see that, because there's so many parts of the puzzle, and if we can do that, that would bring a lot of clarity as to why a lot of times we're trying to communicate, but the other person just doesn't hear what we're trying to tell them, and vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so you can agree to do that for us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Fantastic. Okay, everybody got that. Matter of fact, we have someone on a line. But you know what? This is our Professor Danita Applewhite, and we're going to bring her. Oh, I just hit the wrong button here. There we go.
Just to say thank you. It was a great show, and I just wanted to thank Jeff for the comment he made about, you know, if he hadn't gone through what he went through, he wouldn't be where he is now. And many of us think that our past is so terrible, but it's really terrific lessons,
mm-hmm,
you know, that we learn. It's a blessing to observe and acknowledge the lessons. That's all I wanted to say, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
And absolutely, and I want to close the show, but this is only the beginning, you know, and we're taking communication listening skills, and we're actually breaking this down to some subcategories. Last week we talked about communication skills and listening skills in the business, in organizations, and that was important. And so, now we're talking relationships, which is very, very important, personal relationships. Then we're going to talk about the parent and child aspect, which is all related. It's all related anyway. And then we're going to talk about kind of a peer a relationship we have, generally speaking, at toward the end. And we're going to do that. So, Jeff, thank you for coming. And also, now, if you get in touch with Jeff, you can call. I mean, you can look at www.asktheinternettherapist.com. Did I say that right, Jeff?
You did. Thanks, Nazim. Take care.
Good. Hey, good, Jeff. Thank you for coming. And we're going to see you next week. And I'm going to applaud everybody for coming out. And Danita, thank you there. Also, Danita has
thank
a program,
you.
Student to Teacher, student, the number two
cool.
teacher that comes on hour for my program. And she does wonderful things also. So we have a nice angel network going on.
Yes, we do.
And I was told by my host last week, my guest last week, that I'm not infringing on any copyright laws that Oprah might have.
So, no, you're an angel yourself. You certainly are an angel.
So I feel better by saying I don't want to get sued. So, we have an angel network here too, and a lot of angels doing great work. So thank you very much, and everybody laugh, and everybody have a laugh quota. I want everybody to have at least 8 to 10 laughs a day.
All right.
Very cool.
And
take care, guys.
That's quite a prescription there, doctor.
8 to 10. I want you to report to me next week, okay?
Okay.
Thank you again for coming. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.